You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
This week, Brooke Van Velden of the ACT Party released a statement saying when you made an announcement in December last year that $100 million of capital funding will be used to accelerate ICU beds. There was around 293 ICU beds nationwide. Now, months later, there are 296 beds. Yesterday, Brooke was interviewed by 95BFM reporter Alex and had this to say.
And so we're raising a concern that the government simply puts out press release statements making amazing sounding suggestions, $100 million, but that money is not going where we're seeing results. So we're frittering away money and not seeing any increase in ICU beds.
Are these funding press releases sometimes just a big fugazi to sound good, as Brooke suggests, or is the money making a real difference?
No, the money's making a real difference. I think the counter to that is that, sometimes opposition MPs put out statements that are highly misleading, tendentious, and simply do not deal with the issue at hand. That is the characterisation of Brooke Van Velden's media release, and clearly the statement she made in her interview yesterday. She is just woefully wrong on this.
Brooke also said,
if you go back to why we originally had all these lockdowns, the government said it was because we didn't have ICU bed capacity. And when I talk to people out on the street, they're really concerned that because we haven't seen this capacity, we could end up in a situation where the government plunges us back into another lockdown. And that's really scary for business owners who have been struggling with that as a concept.
Is the country at risk of being put into another lockdown due to ICU capacity not being increased?
Well, we've never been put into lockdown because of ICU capacity. We've been put into lockdown to slow transmission of COVID-19. It is true that certainly in 2020 and even last year, a number of the other public health measures we took were about alleviating pressure off hospitals, and it wasn't just ICUs. It was hospitals generally, because people who get very unwell with COVID, a very, very small proportion wind up in ICU, but most actually require a ward bed for a couple of days, maybe 3 days max. So we're trying to keep the pressure off there. There were claims of an ICU crisis last year. There was no ICU crisis last year. But what was clear is that when you do an international comparison of New Zealand, two countries like, for example, Australia or the UK, the number of ICU beds we have per capita is lower than it should be when we compare ourselves with kind of like-minded countries. So that's why we made the commitment to have additional ICU capacity. It's not just the beds and the equipment, it's the staff that goes with it. And ICU nurses in particular are highly trained, and so it takes a bit of time to get there. But Brooke Van Velden is, sometimes you get an issue, the opposition kind of wades into it and wants to make a point. Sometimes they kind of get it right or get it partially right. On this occasion, I can say, hand on heart, Brooke Van Velden is just totally and completely wrong. She's comparing things that can't be compared. What I can say with confidence is that there is a program underway to add additional ICU beds. Look, about 12 of those beds, or 15 of them, might even be more than that, are part of a construction project at Waitakere campus, the hospital out at West Auckland there, which isn't due for completion until 2024. That has a specific ICU ward in it that did not exist, has not existed up until now, and won't until 2024. I mean, that's the nature of the investments that we're talking about. So the comparisons she is making are just completely wrong.
And finally, after BFM reporter Alex asked Brooke, why are we seeing the slow implementation, the ACT Party had these questions for the Health Minister.
Can you speculate as to what's gone on behind the scenes there, as to why there hasn't been really any notable increase in ICU beds, or why there are these variations in the numbers?
Well, that's a really good question for the Minister. I mean, if you're a minister and you're saying that we're intentionally putting all of this extra money aside to increase our capacity so that we can actually have beds available for people who are seriously ill, and yet we don't see any results, we need to be asking where that money's gone, to who, why, and when we will actually expect to see any results, because I don't think it's good enough that you can have three extra beds and then, you know, might turn around and say, well, it wasn't $100 million that we needed, it was $200 million. And at that point, do you ask for six beds? What is actually the acceptable rate?
Well, the numbers aren't correct, and Brooke Van Velden has taken a different information source and to draw a conclusion that's simply not right. So the $100 million is for capital projects down to 2024. So the aim is to have 85 additional ICU beds by 1st of July 2024. We're expected by now to have about 23 additional ICU beds. We've actually got 18 additional beds. But in all other respects, the capital works are proceeding. In addition to the $100 million, there's over $500 million to staff up those beds. You can understand that ICU beds are the most intensively staffed. It requires about six highly trained nurses per bed. So that's why we started a recruitment campaign earlier this year to get those extra staff. So we're staffing up beds and we're building spaces for new beds, putting new beds in, getting all the kit that goes with those beds. The numbers that Brooke Van Velden refers to comes from a daily tally of ICU and what they call high dependency unit beds, a combination of both. And the day-to-day availability of those beds varies depending on staff absenteeism, scheduled surgery, those sorts of things. So it fluctuates quite a bit. So her figures are simply erroneous and do not relate to the work that has gone into creating additional ICU beds. We do have additional ICU beds compared to when the announcement was made last year, and I'm confident that by the 1st of July 2024 we will have the scheduled 85 additional ICU beds and fully staffed as well.
This week, a new Speaker of the House, Adrian Rudafair, was sworn in. He will be the second Māori to hold this position. Outgoing Speaker Trevor Mallard will be taking a new position as a diplomat to Ireland. What can you tell us about Adrian Rudafair for anyone who is unfamiliar with him? Do you think he will make a good Speaker of the House?
Yeah, I think Adrian will be an outstanding speaker. He's a genuinely lovely guy. He's got a very humble manner to him. He has a very steely resolve, however. When he makes up his mind, he's a very principled guy. So I've known him. We first campaigned together in 2014. He was the candidate for Te Hauhauuru, which is kind of on the western side of the North Island and south of sort of Tokoroa and across to kind of Kawhia. It goes right down south, or actually right to the tip of Porirua. So, and that included New Plymouth, where I was campaigning. So we sort of came across each other there. We've been a caucus together since 2014, and I've got to know him through there. And he's just, he is, as I say, deeply principled. He will bring tikanga Māori into the House in a way that we haven't seen, at least by the Speaker, before. It was great yesterday when he took his, we had the vote and he took the seat, and he had a lot of his whānau and whanaunga there, and they sort of celebrated all of that. So he will bring a very calm and studied manner to the role of Speaker, and he will do a great job. I have great confidence in him.
When you think of Trevor Mallard's legacy as House Speaker, were you happy with the way he conducted his role, or are you happy to be seeing him move on to greener pastures?
Oh, I think Trevor is very much an institution around this place. He's been here a long time, and I think it would be wrong to define Trevor just in the 5 years that he's been Speaker. He's contributed a lot more than that. However, as Speaker, he knows Parliament and its rules and its standing orders very well and very deeply. He did some good innovations in terms of getting better order in the House, and I think at times under other speakers in the time that I've been in the House, where the place would descend into chaos. Trevor had a style and a manner that perhaps didn't suit everybody, but he certainly knew how to keep order. His sort of rewarding, or at least punishing the government by awarding the opposition additional questions, or for that matter, punishing the opposition if they sort of overstepped the mark by taking questions off them, actually did a lot to restore a lot of order in the House. People might not have liked some of his rulings in the blunt way that he delivered them, but not many people will say that his rulings were incorrect. And so, look, he will go with the full respect, or at least with my respect, and I know the respect of many others, for what he was able to do, but actually enormous respect for his total contribution to public life and the institution of Parliament and the time.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.